Welcome to this webinar recording on how to grow your people into being self-directed learners. I'm Robin Petter, the founder and director of Sprout Labs. Our webinars are really interactive experiences, so I don't actually record them, the live ones. What I do is do this recording afterwards. It's both me talking and a summary of some of the interactive activities that happened during the webinar. First of all, to give a quick introduction to Sprout Labs. Sprout Labs works with organizations to design learning ecosystems that accelerate expertise. By learning ecosystems, we mean bits that fit together, not just technology bits, but strategies that are holistic, that are blended, that work at a cultural level, not just a tactical level of designing a program. We generally work across four different service areas. Most of our projects start with strategy work, blueprints, roadmaps. Then occasionally we do some design and development work around innovative approaches. We have a number of technologies to support this ecosystem approach and the 70-20-10 learning model that includes Totara LMS and Classhouse. Then we also help organizations and L&D teams through the implementation program process. So it's coaching and support of in-house teams as well. During the session, what we'll be discussing and what I'll be looking at is blended learning strategies that help to enable self-directed learning, how to foster curiosity in your learners, and how this sort of adds up to being a culture of continuous learning. In the Learning When Working Manifesto, I talk about three things that are happening in our organizations. I call them the three C's: change and constant change, complexity, and the changing nature of business. And as work's becoming more complex and more rapidly changing, there's a real need for different types of collaboration to happen in workplaces. I think the really interesting thing that's starting to happen is we're now seeing automation happening across all industries. And this is really changing, actually, how we need to develop our expertise. There was a recent McKinsey report that talked about the fact that essentially the work that humans are going to be doing more is more high-level thinking work in unpredictable environments. And anything that's sort of predictable becomes things that can be automated. So essentially, we need to prepare our people for the changes that are happening now in a very rapid situation. And part of this is actually preparing people to be self-directed, able to change rapidly, able to develop expertise really quickly. Now, the other trend that's happening is we're now starting to see learners are demanding to be treated as consumers. A lot of our organizational learning in the past has been what's been very organizational centered, very much in a spot where it's been about the organization needs such and such. And there's been a sort of forgetting around the fact that the organization needs such and such, and our people need to change in such and such a way. The learner as consumer sort of readdresses this and rebalances the notion of the learner being at the center of the process, the learner buying into things, the learner may having a choice about what they do and how they do it, and the learner being a spot where they're more likely to learn in their personal lives, where it's a more free-ranging experience as well. Now, as I said before, our webinars are fairly interactive experiences, so at this moment during the webinar, I opened up the session to the group to actually ask, what does a self-directed learner do? Slides of this icon in the corner where I've put a summary of what happened during the discussion onto the slide, and I'll talk a little bit about that as well. So some of the things that came back out from the group around what self-directed learners do, they're self-aware. They set their own goals. Quite often they're really good at self-assessment as well. They're able to measure where they're at and what they need to be able to learn. And they go about this in a really proactive way. They're not actually passive about it. They're constantly seeking to improve what they're doing and getting feedback about that as well. They're curious and accountable as well. And a deep part of this is they actually are in a spot where they think about their own learning and think about their own performance and how to go about it changing that and being really accountable for that as well. Now, the next activity was, what does our organizations do that gets in the way of people being self-directed learners? Essentially, organizations push learning out to people too much. And there's really not a lot of choice in organizations quite often about what people learn, when or how they learn. And there's just really quite often a one-size-fits-all approach, which is that learner is consumer thing. In if learners are treated as consumers, there wouldn't be a one-size-fits-all approach to the whole thing. Now, what's interesting with this particular webinar and these two activities, there was a little bit of me that was, as I organized and as I was thinking through the webinar, I almost did it as just a series of questions, or what I call a content-free program. Because I think this is, we all know what self-directed learning looks like. We all know what gets in the way of it, but it's not always easy to achieve that sort of self-directed learning approach that we're sort of talking about here. So in actual fact, I didn't do a completely facilitated question-based webinar. Thought that might be a little bit too odd for people. So what I've done is weave through two scenarios and stories into the actual program as well. So we're going to look at the first scenario, Mary. She's working as an L&D person and a career advisor in a fintech company. If fintech's a new term to you, it's financial technologies. And we're going to look at some of the ways she supports self-directed learning. Now, I've been very conscious about the choice of my industry here. I've gone for a tech industry because of a few reasons. Tech industries and tech businesses and startups are what's disrupting industries very quickly and very rapidly. They're the people who are putting together new solutions rapidly in agile ways that's really transforming the way business is done. They're also in a spot where the which is quite an interesting little bit of a catch-up. The employees in these sorts of organizations are constantly in a spot where they're learning. Technologies is changing. Essentially, day-to-day activities quite often problem solving, and trying to actually develop new ways of doing things constantly. So it's almost like it's a learning curve for the business to figure out what the right solution is, and then a learning curve also for the learners. Now, one thing Mary does is run quarterly learning goals for everyone. She makes sure that people have self-assessment tools around key skills, and not just technical skills as well. It's about how people work. She has these in maps, so things like stakeholder engagement might actually be an A4 sheet of paper, and then have essentially 70 strategies, 20 strategies, and 10 strategies mapped out as well. So that if people are in a spot where they're seeing, they're going, well, we really need to figure out how we can better engage with the rest of the stakeholders, they can pick up this one of these maps and then sit there and go, okay, I'm going to put this 70 activity that might be something like shadowing someone else for a little while, or going in doing an exchange with another business that's in a different industry, and those sort of ideas are sparked through these maps. So the way I sort of think about these particular maps, these ideas of having goals, is that what people have is pathways through a learning ecosystem. They have choices, which is part of the notion of the ecosystem, that there's choices. But essentially, it's not just a sort of sink and swim approach. It's also this sort of richer thing of actually giving people guidance about how to negotiate through it. One of the things that Mary does every month is run hack days. Essentially, it's a day where the whole of the business pauses for a moment and everyone takes part. Essentially, everyone tries to build something fast. It's a bit of a fun day. People get to play. They get to explore different types of technologies and approaches that they can't normally do in the focus work that they're doing. The day finishes with presentations where people articulate what they've been doing, what they've learned, and then also some bit of prize giving as well. Now, in reality, what's really interesting is these days actually do take up quite a bit of Mary's time to organise. So she switches from being in a spot where in other traditional L&D environments she might be organising training events to the fact she's actually organising these hack day events, which sort of come together in a more learner and employee driven direction. Cool. So a few other approaches from tech companies. Google's mythical 20% on the side projects. Now, I'm calling these mythical because quite often they're actually 120%. Most of Google's employees actually have enough work to do to do their 100%. It's not like they're given 80% of a workload. But what they're encouraged to do is actually take on other things to actually then be able to have some freedom to be able to take on projects. Really good example of these is Google runs a series of visiting lecture programs. This was a 20% program, and this is a really came out of that sort of people wanting to get together and doing something different. Adobe has an innovation toolkit called the Kickbox. If you do a search online for Kickbox, you'll see their site about it. Essentially, it's like a pizza box that someone's given. They're given some guidance in the toolkit about how to make innovation happen, and then a credit card with $1,000 on it to be able to make changes and to spend money on things. Now, what's really interesting is quite often people don't actually use that money to be able to achieve what they need to do. Actually just labeling the innovation and giving them the space and time and naming it gives them the chance to be able to make changes happen. Another example is actually just giving people libraries of resources which they can access at any time to be able to dip into in a self-guided way. So there's a bit of a theme happening here, which is really about giving people some autonomy. Even if it's a small amount of autonomy, or even if it's like the Google 20%, which is actually just almost a conceptual, yes, you can go off and do things, you can make changes. And the Kickbox with labeling it as well. I think this is one of the really important messages to take away, that just this sense of giving some people some autonomy in some way is a powerful enabler for self-directed learning and engaged employees. Now, meet Amelia. She's an L&D manager in a large, highly regulated business. We'll look at some of her challenges, and with the group, we brainstormed some of the ideas around some of her challenges as well. Her organization's moving to a 70-20-10 model, and she really doesn't feel like her people are really well enabled to be self-guided learners. When I opened it up to the group around ideas about how it's going to affect learners, these are some of the things that came through, especially this notion of perception that formal learning is being taken away from them is actually a really common one, that people are sort of sitting there doing a whole, but we enjoy our training days, so days out from our normal work, days to be able to network with other people. She heard people in a spot, and L&D people in a spot where they've sat there and gone, oh, so you're actually really keen on networking. Actually, how about we set up some networking events? And that means you actually, rather than using the training events for networking, you actually have an explicit networking time. Not being able to take risks was another theme that came up. So if it's a regulated environment, it's probably very process driven, and people are not in a spot where they're used to being able to be taking risks. And they're just really not aware of what that informal learning opportunities in the 70 is. It's things quite often people naturally do, and they don't even realise that they're actually learning while they're doing it. Also, the other thing that came through, and I picked it up in a couple of the dot points here, is that to start with, the experience needs to be quite a structured experience. It needs to sort of scaffold, guide and move people forward. You can't just expect people to transform into self-guided learners straight away. If you build programs that help people get to that spot, you're more likely to be successful in the short term and long term. Now, back to Mary's world. Mary's world's not perfect. A lot of her people are younger and they don't actually have really good project management skills. So we'll look at quickly at a program she's designed around project management skills. It's a digital learning-based program with blended learning approaches in it as well. It really helps to accelerate people's performance around project management. It's a two-stage program. Earlier stage is more scaffolded and more structured, and then the second stage is more open. Some really important things, people choose to participate, has a rolling intake, and people soon quickly see that people are learning and getting value from it, and they choose to take it up. It's not a short program, it happens over a period of 3 months, so it's actually spaced, there's time for practice as well. And the learning experience is really around a series of scenarios. And what happens through that is the learner is asked to solve problems in those scenarios. They then can access some resources that to help them solve those problems. Or they can just really dive in, give it a go, have a go at the problems, see if they get them right or wrong. Now, these resources and the whole learning experience is set up in a very subtle way where they can navigate totally freely around the whole resource. So there's not a lot of forward buttons. There's not a lot of locking down. You must do this activity before you choose the next bit. Subtle sort of way of being able to build in autonomy and control in the learners is actually freeing up your navigation in your digital learning. It's a very subtle message when you sit there and make people have to go through every slide, is you're sitting there saying, actually, you have no autonomy, you have no control, you have to do it exactly the way we require you to do it. Learning's a bit messier, and most people are in a spot where they can cope with navigation, where they can move around. The later stages are quite different, and the first stage has sort of helped people get to that spot. There's still some scenario-based work happening. They're essentially being sent out constantly challenges via email, which they're then having to solve. These are sort of a background simulation. More importantly, they're actually taking on some project-based work, making a change happen, working in a team maybe to do this as well. And then during the project, they're also given those resources and they're asked to actually build summaries and do presentations of those to peers. So what they're actually doing is articulating and reflecting on resources is the process of actually making that learning really happen for them. Embedded into this is actually how to learn as well. They're setting goals, they're finding information, they're reflecting. And that sort of process of them doing things like the project-based work, like the summaries, is they're only building their own mental model of what's actually happening. The other side of learning how to learn is learning how to practice in a really deliberate way. Deliberate practice is practice where you try something, you get feedback, and you deliberately make a change. You don't just keep on practicing, you actually have a feedback loop within it to try to keep on improving. The theme through this is to make the learners do the work. So instead of it being a spot where the resources are explicitly teaching and showing people, the learners are constructing and building their own understanding. They're having to take on responsibility and that accountability that was defined as part of that self-learning, self-guided learning bit in the early part. Back to Amelia. So her organization is moving towards making everyone more customer-centered, and she really needs to improve capability in this area. So we opened up the session to the group to do a little bit of design work around this. This is one of the Sprout Lab's 70-20-10 learning maps. They're very visual ways of working. We work with them in two ways, either during workshops to work to co-design solutions using sticky notes with stakeholders. We also use them quite often as a way of being able to document 70-20-10 blended learning solutions. 70-20-10 solutions have lots of moving parts, so being able to explain them visually is really interesting. Now, what was, and this is a bit of a summary of everything that happened during this. So one of the things I think was really nice was this idea of being a mystery shopper. So in actual fact, I've seen it in a couple of induction programs recently as well, where essentially organizations are sitting there going, okay, the best way of making our people centered on our customer is actually putting them in the spot where they have to be our customer. So one was a business that was providing online services around investing. So essentially every new employee was given $1,000 to spend on the system to invest. So they were being put in the system and put in the spot without being the customer. Really nice idea, and it's interesting sometimes the 70 and 20 things really mix together, and you can see how I've actually placed things like shadowing and focus groups as being both sort of a 70 thing and a 20 thing. Building a wiki of best practice. Quite often organizations might have sales or customer service playbooks. If these are actually wikis and people can actually participate in actually building them themselves, it's a really different experience to just having your subject matter experts put together those playbooks. And some really nice sort of highly experiential 10 solutions of interactive videos that might be really engaging customer experiences and examples of best practice, and really making sure that these skills, if they're really actually important to the organization, are embedded into the induction programs as well. So an important part of being a self-guided learner is actually being a curious person. So I opened up to the group with this question about how curious people behave. And one of the things that really came through from multiple people was they ask questions. And they had questions about why. And they're both creative and critical thinkers. And they invest time into this sort of notion of asking questions and exploring as well. But I think the really important thing and the real takeaway for me is a curious person asks questions. In Mary's business, she's equipped her managers to ask questions, set up constant learning conversations, which essentially means that the relationship between team leaders and managers and people is really focused on learning and performance, and these three questions around what have you learned, what's next, and then how can I help you? This might not always be the spot where the people manager is actually the expert. It might be the fact that they're in a spot where they can direct them back out to other things as well. The other thing is managers are equipped with a set of skills and a set of questions that really try to make sure that they're really understanding their people's motivations, why they're at work. So they've been curious about their people. They're really digging to that level of why they're at work, why they're motivated to do what they're doing, and really working with them to make sure their work is meeting those motivations and making them sure that they're curious. There's a few other things that Mary does around peer learning and building questioning environments. This includes group critiques, essentially once a week for an hour. Someone presents the code that they've written this week or the system they've set up, and then the group sort of does a critique of that, walks through it, does a whole, oh, actually, I probably wouldn't have done that way. Oh, have you thought about doing this? These types of critiques are really common in design and creative training, and it's really interesting to see them being now applied to more technical areas as well. Sort of a group learning experience around a particular thing that might be an individual's performance, and then opening that back up into a more shared learning and improvement experience. There's constantly lessons learned sessions, so as well as that individual, what have you learned? That question's being asked at a team level, as well as what have we learned? And then there's learning circles around particular topics, like the project management one as well. The project management sessions, if you remember back to that sort of notion that people were making summaries of researchers' resources and then presenting them back, they're part of a series of lunch and learn sessions where peers are essentially peer teaching to each other constantly. These will, might be weekly things, but with different topics and moving things around constantly. Then there's a, the organization has a learning lab app, which basically prompts people to ask, what have you learned today? Mary sorts these and then shares back out actually what's really important as well. A really low tech way of doing this, sort of constantly asking what people have learned, is people keeping learning logs as a simple learning low tech way of being able to do similar types of things. Then opened up to the group about other ways curiosity could be fostered. Topics and themes that came up were things like passion projects and inspiring people, giving people time and space to be able to explore what they need to be able to explore, and then any avenues for sharing, blogging, resource libraries, and being able to participate in the development of resource libraries. This particular one around the sort of sharing of work and resource libraries was one that I picked up and had ready to go with another sort of strategy. And it's the notion of a personal learning environment. It's a term that's not being used as much as what it used to be, but it's this notion that people need environments where they can find something, then they can collect and possibly tag that, make a comment on that, and then share that with a group of people as well. And quite often it's both about that sort of process of what I've talked about then of knowledge and resources, but it's also about being able to find the right people to be able to ask the right questions as well. What's really interesting for me is different stages in my career. I've been in a spot where I've had a personal learning environment, and sometimes I've shared and sometimes I haven't shared. In the work we do at Sprout Labs, I actually find it more difficult now to completely share what we're doing all the time, because sometimes we're working on projects with clients that are confidential. So I don't think it's actually compulsory that in actual fact someone has to be in a spot where a personal learning environment is actually about sharing. And sharing might also be a spot where it might be just sharing within a team. It doesn't have to be a wide, open, public sharing. A couple of examples and a few things to talk about is, and they're quite often public examples as well, is Stephen Downes' old daily newsletter. Essentially what Stephen Downes does is go through a whole lot of resources every day, sits there and goes, yep, I'll tag that, I'll bookmark that, that's useful and interesting, I'll write 100 words on that, and then he shares that back out to a newsletter of thousands of people. Now, what's really interesting is it's Stephen's viewpoint on these resources, and it's really quite engaging and interesting, but he's not doing that process for his audience, he's doing that for himself, and it just happens to be a really useful thing at the same time. Other people use things like Evernote and Google Keep. And then sometimes, actually, this is exactly what people are doing when they're tagging and sharing things and writing notes about things on Twitter and LinkedIn. This brings me to the end of the recording. Hope you found this really useful. And if you want some help with growing your people into being self-guided learners, please get in contact and we can have a talk about possible projects. My contact information is there, and probably if you're listening to this, you might already have my email as well. Cool. Thank you very much.